first year afterwards after Brian died. It was awful. Of course it was awful. And I sat there and, you Google things like, what's my purpose? What should I do? Because you just, you don't know what your point is. And it said, well, write a list of the things that bring you joy. And I thought, oh God, I don't know anymore. I don't know. And that was...
Hello and welcome to Finding Your Spark Again. I am so glad that you're here with us today and that we have Carol Bannons with us today. Carol lost her husband 4.5 years ago, and she has gone through a huge transformational journey from grief to joy. She's here today to talk to us about that. She's actually a certified grief to gratitude coach. So not just her own experience with it, but she's got framework around that. Thank you so much for being here today, Carol. Welcome.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, Donna Lynn.
It's a very interesting topic, and I don't think that you and I have actually talked about the fact that I came to this podcast because I lost my husband.
We did not talk about that.
No,
I'm so sorry.
You had no idea.
I had no
you had
idea.
No idea. No, I come from a perspective where things are happening, and as they are happening, I'm finding my way to the best possible outcome. And and that sort of framework for me has made that transition infinitely easier than it is for most people, even though the loss is no less gigantic.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So
the perspective.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, here we are. You're still breathing.
I know.
And heart's still beating. What can we do?
Yeah. You have to go on. Like, there's not a lot of choice, really.
Yeah.
Well, there is choice. There is choice. It's how you go on, but you do go on, right? And so it's how do you go on to a place where you can enjoy life again, where you find joy again. Because I know for me, I mean, that first year afterwards, after Brian died, it was awful. Of course it was awful. And I sat there and, you Google things like, what's my purpose? What should I do? Because you just, you don't know what your point is. And it said, well, write a list of the things that bring you joy. And I thought, oh God, I don't know anymore. I don't know. And that was the spark that made me think, okay, you're still in grief, but you've got to make some steps now. You've got to change some things to move forward in life. Doesn't mean it was easy. It wasn't. And it didn't mean I wasn't hurting, because I was. And I'm, it's 4.5 years and I still have those grief bursts and I still miss him. And I have joy again.
Hmm. Yeah. So you said some really interesting things in terms of the word purpose, finding a purpose for being here, and also that purpose is connected to joy.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a really interesting connection that we often don't make when we're just thinking there's no point and we might as well check out.
Yeah. I can remember sitting on the end of my bed thinking, what is the point? And I looked up and there was a picture of my two children who are adults now, but they were little ones and they're so cute. I thought, well, they're my point. They are my point. Do I feel like crap? Yes, I do. But they're my point. I want to be around for them. I want to be around if I ever get grandchildren, all of that. And they are what bring me joy. And it's about looking for those things when you're deep in grief, the little things that bring you joy, whether it's a flower, a cup of coffee, a friend, but starting to look for the things that can make you feel just a little bit better, just a bit. Because you still have to feel the grief. You still, and actually this is one of the big things for me is, you shelved the grief, or I shelved the grief because I had to go back to work, and I was a physiotherapist and I was treating chronic pain patients. And you have to give a lot, of course, to them. And I would do that and I'd come home and I'd be exhausted. And 3 years later, I burnt out and finally went to grief counseling. And she said, when you push down the emotion of grief, you also don't feel any of the joy. You numb out every other emotion. And I went, oh, light bulb. Because I just felt flat and numb.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's very common when we're going through any kind of trauma like that, and particularly a trauma of loss. Could be loss of identity, loss of partner, loss of any loved
job,
one,
whatever.
You know. Yeah, that's right. Could be a loss of job. All of that, it shifts who we see ourselves as, right?
Yes, I can
remember there was a moment just after my husband died, when his brother and my sister-in-law were sitting there, and I said, I just don't know who I am without him.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, I was very young when we got together.
Right, right.
And so am I her? Am I her if he's not here? Like, who have I become? And
you lose your identity.
And how is that enmeshed in this person that is no longer here in the physical world with me? And what was interesting was she in that moment said, I know who you are.
Oh, what
and
a lovely thing to say.
It was beautiful. Yeah. It really, really touched me.
What you needed, right?
I did. I really did need that. And I will say it brought into focus that who we are doesn't actually change when we go through these giant portals, even though, because we have that core, and even when we're not in touch with it, we have this core and it's there for us.
Yeah, totally. When I was creating, so I went, you know, I went through the, well, was going through the grief, and I decided to be a coach, and I wanted to be a coach for midlife women initially, which is where my Joyful Blueprint program comes from, because it was about reconnecting with who you are, rediscovering, you know, what you love to do, and then reinventing yourself. And that really came from my own grief. It's like, well, there are a lot of women out there who are feeling that, whether it's from loss of a partner, loss of a job, a divorce, empty nesters, or getting to this point where they've given to so many and then they don't know who they are anymore. But really, I think my journey took me onto this grief to gratitude coaching, but I wasn't ready for it earlier on. I had to deal with my own grief. I had to be solid in myself to be able to help others through their grief. But it is a reconnection with who you are. You're still there. It's just trying to find you again. And that takes some work.
Yeah, that is a really interesting point you bring up, is that we really don't have anything to give until we are solid, until we have ourselves, we're in that space, and so that we don't have to worry that we're giving parts of ourselves away, right? We have something that can flow through, as opposed to really be giving to a point it's not healthy for us.
Yes, exactly. And it's a very difficult thing to spend, to give yourself that grace and that time. I think we're in such a busy world, and we go on, and people expect you to get back to normal quickly. And to be fair, they don't know what it's like. And I didn't know what it was like to lose a husband, of course. And when you do, it's like, oh my God. Even if you think you're prepared, you're not. Even if you think you know how you'll feel, you don't. Even if you're expecting it, it's still a shock. And we all do it so differently. And I mean, I have a sister-in-law who lost her husband. She went into manic overdrive of busy, busy, busy. And I was on the sofa watching Netflix for a year. I couldn't move. So we were just totally, totally opposite. But that was how we dealt with our grief. And so we have to acknowledge that. We have to say that we all do that, but we do have to then make that decision of how we're going to come back to life again. Hmm. How are we going to live our lives without that person?
Yeah, so let's go back a little bit to that part where you talked about how everybody is different, because I found one thing I am positive of is that nobody is going to show up with the right thing to say at the right time.
Oh no, they don't. And they try so hard. And
they try so hard. They
how
love
are you?
So
don't
much.
Ask me how I am. I'm dying inside. And I know it's the thing that we all say to each other, right? You bump into a friend, you say, hey, how are you? And it pops out of your mouth before you've thought about it. And even now, having gone through that and wished people wouldn't say it to me, I have some friends who've lost people. And I have to stop myself from saying, how are you? Because it's just such a normal thing for us to say. And people don't know what to say. They don't know whether to say anything. Should they say the name of your loved one? Maybe it'll upset you. So sometimes they avoid it. And actually, all you want to do is talk about them. So,
well, so that's interesting, right? Because I feel like that, even that of the all you want to do part is varies per person, right?
It actually does. Yes,
it really does. I had for a while, I had a meetup group where we talked about these kinds of things and how to handle, you know, walking through grief and everything. And I was someone who I was so tired of that question. I was like, are you kidding? Like, or worse, how are you? Which is really different than how are you? And that sort of like, I'm acknowledging that you are in a painful situation. And quite honestly, for me, it was important to remember that I'm not always in that situation, that not to force myself to be in the grieving position 24 hours a day. And if I could find a way to giggle at something, if I could find something that looked funny, if I could find something that was just sort of semi-enjoyable, to go with that, to be in that moment.
So important. And to not feel guilty about it either. It's interesting with the holidays coming up and that very difficult times for people who have gone through grief, especially if it's new grief. And I think one of the challenges is if they go to a gathering and they find themselves enjoying it, they can feel a little bit guilty, like, I shouldn't be. And yes, of course you should, because laughing is healing. Smiling is healing, and it's okay. And you're not disrespecting your loved one. And so, yes, finding those moments of joy and happiness and things that make you smile are so important.
So there's kind of a tie that we make between how much I hurt and how much I loved you.
Yeah,
and there is no actual string between those two
of
things.
Of course,
that's
not.
Just man-made. We just made that up.
totally,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and going back to that grieving differently, some people are really quiet about it. They're not all tears and drama. They do that quietly in their home, and you don't see it. And then somebody says to you, and somebody said to me, "Oh, you're so strong." Oh, I'm not. I just don't show
even the
you.
Whole judging thing. It makes me crazy. Mm. It makes
anyway,
me nuts.
people don't know, they don't understand, and they're trying to do their best. And I think we have to educate them in the best way we can.
Yeah, I think that's the point, is that they don't know, and there is no playbook. There cannot be a playbook, because I'm different from you, different from the next, different from the next.
Yeah.
Our circumstances are different. Like all
Everything.
Of it is so different. You know, even and our reactions to like what the trauma was that we went through are going to be different based on who we have been. Before we leave that piece, maybe just to say, it is okay to educate the people around you when you have the energy for it.
Yes, when you have the energy for it. That's right.
You're not obligated. Right. You can just be mean to them if you want to, or go to bed or whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
But it is, I mean, one of the things that I really want to do is on social media now, is to really try and educate people about, think about what you say and ask permission. Would you like to talk about your loved one? Because as you said, everybody's different. I liked it. Some of the time, but not all of the time. But some people may say, you know what, I just can't. And that's okay. But ask permission.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess before we leave that topic, I will say that for me, personally, it was really important to be able to talk about my loved one without talking about my loss.
Yes. Yes.
So those are two different things.
They are.
Right.
My memories.
Internal, whatever I'm going through, isn't for me. It really isn't for anybody but me. I mean, I'm a very private person. So for the most part, right, those wounds, they are not shareable until they are scars.
My husband was a jazz pianist, and so everybody wanted to talk to me about him. And they had all sorts of funny stories and memories, which was lovely, lovely, lovely. And so that really helped me.
So yeah, so that is a really important piece of it, I think, to be willing to say what you are thinking, even when you don't, like, even the words "what you want" feel like a lot of pressure when you're in grief. It's like, I don't know what I want. I want you to leave you me alone. Know. And then you go, where is everybody? Why is nobody here taking care of me? Right?
Yeah.
So it's not like you know what you want.
You have no clue. Your brain's not working.
This moment is not okay.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about how you get from there, because that is a lot that we just talked about.
It is.
To that reinvention process, and which I view as the road to joy, right? Reinvention is really how we get there to that.
Of course. I mean, for me, I think gratitude played a huge, huge part. I've always done a gratitude journal, and I made the effort to really try and find things that I was grateful for. Dr. Rick Hansen talks about taking in the good, and I love that. You know, when you're walking and you see a flower, rather than walk past it and go, oh, that was nice, you go, you stop, you smell it, you stop and smell the roses, you stop, you take in the colors, you take in the scent, and you expand the experience. Now, if you can do that with your cup of coffee or your cup of tea or the little things, or just be grateful for that person who texted you that said, I'm thinking of you, or the smile from a cashier at the supermarket, just starting to build the gratitude, that I think is really important. The other thing that was helpful for me was honoring my husband. And I was lucky, he'd recorded his last concert, and I made that into a CD, and I sent it out to all his friends and family and fans, and it was really a very healing thing for me to do. So doing something for somebody else, that was helpful, you know, and it was sharing him all over again. But it took time. It took time to start feeling better. And I remember some days you think, gosh, I feel good today. And then the next day you wouldn't. And then it started to be, oh, I had a couple of days of feeling good. Am I better? No, it's not better. It's just you had a couple of good days. But I think it was the effort of gratitude. I had beautiful friends, beautiful, beautiful friends, supportive. That made a difference to me. And just really choosing to try and move forward, choosing to live my life, because I had the life to live. He didn't. And so I had to choose that. I could have stayed, you know, on the sofa for the next 30 years, but it wasn't really very appealing. Does it mean I still don't feel sad about his loss? No, of course not. Can I listen to his music? Barely. But I'm having a life, and I'm happy, and I'm joyful. But boy, oh boy, when I read back on my 5-year diary, it's like pretty, pretty sad stuff. It took a while.
Yeah. So let's talk about this kind of rehearsing the muscle of happiness, right?
Yes.
Because I think that's what you're getting at here, is that your reference to, like, some days I could do it easily and some days I couldn't do it easily, meaning be okay.
Right? Yes.
It really reminds me of, like, when you go to a physical trainer and you do your biceps and you show up, and then the next day you can't lift that. And then two days later you can lift double that. And you're like, I don't know what's going on. But it's a rehearsal. It's a muscle.
It is.
Kind of. It's the idea of a muscle.
Yeah.
Conceptually, it's a muscle.
Conceptually, it's a good analogy. It is. It's practice because we know with the brain, and this is sort of apart from breathe, it looks out for threats. It looks out for, it has a negativity bias. We always look for the negative. We have to practice looking for the positive, and we have to start to learn that you can't rely on all of the outside stuff. We have to find something inside that makes us content. And of course, I did tons of reading. I'm a reader. I've got every book on happiness and self-compassion, actually, a big one, of course, self-compassion, radical acceptance, all of these things of accepting the emotions, being with them, sitting with them, and looking for something that makes you feel just a little bit better. Not going from grief to joy like that. That's on the Abraham Hicks emotional scale. You don't want to go from there to there. You can't do that quantum leap easily, you want to just feel a little bit better each day, a little bit, each month, each year.
For me, it's really important to break that down to each moment that that when I assess a day or a week or a month or a year, it's flawed. It's through a filter that is me. And so it's kind of flawed. And I know a lot of people who like to journal and they'll look through that and they'll be like, oh, well, this now I have like evidence. But even that is kind of flawed because we're not every moment of our day. We just know what we focused on that day. We focused on the sadness that day. Oh, okay. But yeah, did we have good moments or not? So this concept of really becoming present, like you talked about when you were walking in the with the flower, you know, you're really, it's a sense of being absolutely present in this moment, which is really the only place that grief doesn't exist. Right.
Yeah.
Because grief is about something, our separation from something in our past.
Yep.
Or our thoughts about what our future are going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so interesting because when you think, when we think of that, 47% of the time, we're not in the present moment. We are either in the past thinking about it, ruminating, or we're in the future sort of fortune telling, what, you know, well, what's life going to be without this person? And of course, those thoughts go through our mind and we still have to acknowledge the grief. But can you be mindful of this very moment? It's the only moment you have. And that, that is helpful. It takes practice again, doesn't it, to come back to that moment, to the maybe the breath, or if you're washing up, just wash up. Don't think about anything but the washing up. Then you can't think of your grief.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that deciding, that willingness, we're really talking about a willingness to to not feel like crap all the time.
Yeah,
that's a big piece of it, right? Because I found my experience was that the people who came and were well-meaning, many of them wanted me to be sad, right? Because they expected me to be sad because I was sad, and who wouldn't be sad going through that?
Yeah, yeah.
But I was reaching for any moment that I could find that had relief in it, right? Which means that it felt a little better than wherever I was in that moment. And I think your reference to washing the dishes, I love the reference to washing the dishes because I think of it often, like what is going on in your mind when you're washing the dishes, right? If you're, if this is what you're doing and your hands are busy, but your mind is going someplace else, then you, there is, you cannot be in any sort of real relationship with that moment.
Yeah. And I think it's a really delicate balance because we want to acknowledge, I'm not saying do not acknowledge the emotion of grief and sadness. Of course, we have to. We absolutely have to, but we don't want to stay in it for the rest of our lives. And if anybody is listening to this who's in grief, you know, our life can expand around the grief. It doesn't mean you don't love the person. It doesn't mean you don't miss the person, but your life is able to expand around it if you choose to let it, if you make some decisions that sometimes are difficult decisions. I mean, leaving a 36-year career as a physiotherapist, that was a big decision for me. I loved my job, but I couldn't handle treating chronic pain every day, day in, day out, when I was dealing with my own pain.
So let's talk about this finding your own way and what your emotional state is when you make good decisions and what your emotional state is when you make really bad decisions. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for me, the first year afterwards, everything stayed the same. And then I started thinking, okay, need to do something. I hired a coach. Then I decided I was going to be a pain coach because that was something I was very familiar with. But after a year of that, I thought, oh my gosh, it's too much. I'm doing it during the day and coming home. And eventually I actually burnt out by treating patients and keeping going. And so I took myself away for a week to a retreat where there was no social media, no TV. And I sat and I journaled and I journaled and I just took care of myself. And I gave myself the space to finally think about what I wanted and to allow myself to feel the emotions and do all of that. And I wrote in the diary, and yes, I was done with physio, but the funny thing is, the moment I came home, I'd made the decision in my head, that's it, I'm done. I came home and then I got a bit wobbly about it. I'm like, oh, do I really want to give up my career? Oh, I don't know. As soon as I got back into my home environment, I'm like, oh, I don't know.
This is a really good point. This is an important, important point. To change of all sorts, right?
Yeah.
If we want to change, one of the simplest things we can do to support ourselves is just go somewhere, anywhere else, right?
Totally.
Go for a walk to a different place in the town, go for a vacation, go for whatever it is that we store our memories in the places, right? We see, when I was a kid, we had to, in school, all the chairs were lined up, you know, and we had assigned seats.
Right.
And if I went in there and I learned all the material from one seat, I could pass the test, no problem.
Okay.
But if I got put in a different seat, I literally could not pass the test. That is where my information was. And I think that's not uncommon that people have, I mean, that's a little extreme, right? But people have some relationship to space and thought and memory and understanding our own identities that is related to space. So get out, go do something else.
It was mind blowing actually for me. I mean, I was not really a big journaler, and there I am just writing like mad. I'm sitting at the dinner table writing, I'm out in the garden writing at this place. All this stuff just pouring out of me that I didn't, because at home you've always got the laundry, you can clear up, there's always something, the phone's ringing. The space and the change of environment, it can be transformational to allow your thoughts and your heart to speak to you.
Yes, what a great tip. What a great tip. And I think a good tip for all sorts of change. You know, anytime that you're reaching for furthering your career or reaching for a new career or reaching for a new thought in your relationships, right? If you think like, I always perpetuate this situation and I want to do it differently, try swapping seats at lunch, right? If that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
That's really great to hear you talking about.
Yeah.
I also hear you being incredibly intentional.
Yeah, I think I am.
I think it requires that. I think that this giant portal, as I like to call it, of change that we are sometimes thrust into by loss.
Yes.
It requires that we be intentional, because you can just get tossed around in there and kind of get lost, right? Mm-hmm. I know someone who became a widow and she reads books. You know what I mean? Like, that's what she wants to do. That's it.
Yeah.
And I thought, that doesn't look so bad. That looks pretty good. Maybe I could do that.
maybe. And actually, funny enough, you still kept talking about books. I remember the first year I couldn't really focus and read. And I'm a big reader. I love reading all sorts of stuff on the brain and neuroscience, you know, and that's my physio background, but I love all of that. I could barely read a book. And one of my patients was bringing me these very light, almost romantic Regency novels. And I was just eating them up until one day I read one and I thought, what am I reading here? I realized my brain was coming back. And it's so interesting. You don't always realize that where you are until you start to feel better. It's really interesting. But yes, I didn't want to be that person sitting on the sofa reading for 30 years and watching the TV. And yes, it's intentional. And that takes effort. It takes support. It takes work. I would never have taken a month off work if I hadn't had a grief counselor to say, because I said, I'm just going to take 2 weeks. And she said, really? 2 weeks? Why aren't you taking a month? I said, my patience. She's like, Carol, you need to take a month. I'm like, I felt terrible doing it. And it was the best thing I could do. Gave me this enough space to think.
So let's talk a little bit about this joy. Mm-hmm. Here's joy. Mm-hmm. It's really far away from all of those feelings.
Yep. Yes.
any of them. They're all in the same neighborhood.
Yep.
They don't feel good.
No. Nope.
And we have joy up here. And we have gratitude, which kind of takes us a little bit on the way. But let's talk a little bit about that sort of for lack of a better way of putting it, vibrational matching of contentment, satisfaction, ease, flow, all those things that are along the roadmap that get us to the state of happiness, joy, bliss, all the things that we go like, yeah, that's what I want. I want that, even though I feel dead inside.
So how do we get there? Again, it's probably different routes for everybody, isn't it? I mean, one of the things that sort of was taken away from me was music, because Brian was a musician and I could not listen to his music. It was heart-wrenching, but I couldn't listen to anybody else's music and I couldn't play the piano. Those would have been my go-to things for bringing me a little bit of joy. Now, I knew I was feeling better when I could all of a sudden play the piano. It's like, oh, okay, that's good. So I think partly it's a bit of time thing, but I think you have to search for things that are going to make you feel uplifted. So if you watch TV, don't watch all the really grim murder stuff. It pulls your vibration down. I used to watch that stuff, you know, all the Sopranos and all of that stuff. And now I'm on much lighter stuff because I just want to feel good when I watch something. I don't want to read the news and read. I mean, I hear it. I hear the little bursts on the radio, the 30-second. Actually, that's all I probably need now, because I don't need to hear who was murdered and all of this stuff. That pulls your vibration down.
I heard somebody say one time, it's only news the first time you hear it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's it.
So choosing what you expose yourself to, I think that's one thing. Choosing who you're around with. Now, we all know there are people who just uplift you. We had a receptionist at the clinic. I never saw her sad in one day. She was just joyous. She was a pleasure to be around. And I could hear her laughter. She was lovely. And there are other people who just suck the life out of you. Spending time around those people, you want to maybe limit that, because that pulls you down again vibrationally. People that complain a lot. Oh my goodness, I don't want to hear it. So it is intentional about picking your environment, picking who you're around, spending maybe a little less time. I know if it's family, it's difficult, but picking friends who are uplifting. Awesome.
Yeah, you know, you really bring up a good point, because I think that all of us would say, I want to be around my uplifting friends in any time of life. We would always say that. But we would also say, well, that one's so depressed. I want them to feel better, so I want to go be near them. Or that one, I know they're miserable, but they need someone to love them. Or I've known them my whole life, and so I'm not going to. Right. And when you're going through that portal of change, whether it's from loss or other ways, it literally, your life depends on these choices. Like the outcome of this swirl is going to be different depending on what you do with the next 10 minutes and the next 10 minutes and the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, totally. And I'm not saying don't see those friends who are depressed or negative, not at all. But I'm saying limit the amount of time perhaps you spend with them, or and go for a walk with them, so that they can't just sit and spend an hour and a half telling you how awful their life is. And one of the things I found very interesting was, you know, people would tell you about everybody that had died. And I'm thinking, don't start telling me that. I've just lost my husband. I don't need to hear your story about who's died and who's dying and who's sick. Not the best thing. So being around those sort of people, it's like, oh, no. So I have been even intentional with friends, and I'm very fortunate because I have fabulous friends that, you know, really fabulous friends. But picking things that make you feel good. Travel is something that I love. Well, of course, COVID really nixed that, didn't it? But picking things that make you feel a little bit better, so that you have more moments of feeling a little bit better, and working at it. And some days you can't. Sometimes you don't have the energy and then you blob. That's how it is.
So one of the reasons that I chose the titling the way I did for this episode is that it occurs to me, when we talk about grief and joy, most of the time people don't talk about those two things together. Yep. And also, you know, when you have joy at 7 years old,
Yeah.
And you've had a typical upbringing, right? So not that you've been through a loss and then gone someplace else, right? But when you are younger and you haven't been through a lot, your sense of joy and your experience of joy is very, very different than your experience of joy after you've lived a fullness of life, right?
Yeah, it's less, maybe less exuberant. You know, kids.
You know,
are
I was going to say the opposite, actually.
Oh well,
I really think that the sort of like a springboard, the depression of that springboard that life causes, like we just it just happens, like crap happens, you know.
Yep.
And that what can happen from there, the spring, if you allow it, can be gigantic.
Yeah,
I think you can give up halfway, right?
You can.
Be like, oh well, it's pretty good.
I just think of kids as so exuberant because they don't think of anything else. But I think you touched on something. It's the allowing. And we have to receive joy. We have to be open to it. And that again is that looking for goodness, appreciation, the blessings in things, and just being open to it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that grief changes joy. And I think that when we say that, mm-hmm. we do mean, most people mean, that means that it is always coloring what I'm feeling. I had so many people say to me, after my husband died, it's a common reference and most people believe it. The pain of your loss will never go away, but it whatever lessens or whatever.
I don't agree. Yeah, I don't agree with that myself.
Me neither.
I mean, I can think of Brian now without lots of tears, without lots of pain. And I know initially I didn't think I'd ever feel like that. You know, you don't want to get out of bed. You don't, just getting out of bed was an effort. It doesn't mean I love him any the less now because I'm not just moping around. I loved him. I cared for him when he was sick. I, you know, this man, I loved him. And I need to have a life. And it's really important to allow yourself to have that life and to have that joy. And no, I don't feel that I'm in grief all the time. Do I sometimes have moments of grief? Absolutely. Do I have moments of grief bursts? Yes. Does something somebody sometimes trigger me? Yes. But the majority of the time, I'm a happy camper.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is a great way to frame it. I think it's important to give it a little bit of a framework like that. Mm. Just to say that for me, it really is an acknowledgement that we're in a new life. In a new life. It's a different life.
Yes.
It's not that life. And, you know, I lived in multiple places. And so one of the places I lived was New York City. I spent 20 years in Massachusetts after I lived in New York City.
Right.
And I loved New York. I loved New York.
I love New York. Yes.
Right. It's wonderful. But it was over. It was also, I didn't have a regret from leaving. I didn't think, oh, if I could just go back. Right. So these moments where our lives become different, right? That was a good decision we made. It was a we decision, right? It was a decision that both my husband and I were in on, and that we found our way through things that he wanted and things that I wanted, and how could we have all of it? And was a move the right way to get that all of it and all of that, right?
Yeah.
And I would not trade that portal, that change, for anything, right? Because I got to live this whole life in the next place with those people and with those interactions and making those relationships as well as the ones I had before. But it doesn't mean I don't love the people who I love in New York, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I don't miss walking down the street every once in a while.
Exactly. It's a different life. It's a different life. And I think that's, we have to accept that. And, you know, you do have to give up all hope for that better yesterday, that they're gone. they are gone. And that acknowledgement and acceptance is difficult, certainly initially. And nothing we can do can bring them back. And so
you're talking about regret? Are you talking about regret?
No, well, no, but no, but you can throw regret in. I think that's one of the pitfalls of grief. People regret things they didn't do. I mean, I regret not taking off 3 months of work so I could be with him. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Can't change it.
Can't change it now.
So done.
And also it happened and you got to live the life you got to live, right?
You did the best you
can. Whether it could have been different, who knows?
Of course, of course.
I do think of arguments that I had with my husband over what now seem like the most trivial things.
Yes.
And I acknowledge in the moment out loud, I say, oh, you know what? Now it doesn't matter to me how the silverware is sorted.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You were right about that. I'm really sorry. Right.
Yeah.
So those moments where you try to go back and relive, and I think people do this under multiple circumstances,
yeah,
where we're clinging to the past in order to try to change it.
Yeah. And we can't.
It is what it is. Take the good, yeah, and leave the rest.
And leave the rest of it. Exactly. And that is challenging for people. I think because we do cling to things, especially when we're sad and we're lost, we're sort of clinging to the memory, but we don't cling to all the guilt and the regrets as well. Let those go. Cling to the cherished moments, to the beautiful moments, the ones that fill your heart with joy. That's what we want to cling
so
to.
This is interesting, right? Because we're getting back to that vibrational matching, that mm-hmm. matching of the environment that we practice within our bodies.
Yes.
And when I am sad, when I am actively, I watched a movie, I don't remember, a few days ago or a week ago, and I kept thinking to myself, why are you still in the room? Why are you still in the room with this movie? And I'm pouring out of my
yep.
face, the tears are coming, and I'm thinking,
yes.
And it was like some awful, it wasn't awful, it was supposed to be sweet, right?
Yeah.
If you hadn't been through those pains, it would have
yeah.
been sweet.
Yeah.
And it triggered everything in me. And at the end of it, I could associate, right? Because that was my space I was in. I was in loss, I was in regret, I was in a little bit of worry, right? All those characters had done that thing. And I went with them, right? Mm-hmm. For those few minutes.
Yeah.
And when I went with them, I also activated every memory I have
yes.
of the times that I could have come home earlier, or I could have not forgotten to pick up the thing on my way home to make my husband happy, or any of those things, right?
Yeah.
You activate that stuff in you that yeah. is dormant. You don't need it. It's not in your world unless you activate it.
Yeah.
And when you do, it can make a real wave, right? It can
yes.
sort of really do that too.
Yeah.
So activate, I love your suggestion of watching happy movies or watching happy shows, because there's so much to explore in those above the line, you know, emotions
yeah.
that we don't. We go, and then they were happily ever after.
Yeah.
It was trouble, I mean, there was trouble, it was better.
And then happy.
And then it was happy.
Watch some Hallmark Christmas movies, you know, they'll make you cry for a moment and there's always a happy ending and it's always the same story. I mean, I can only tolerate maybe one a year, but because they're a bit sickly. But yeah, I mean, when we think about the heart and heart coherence and mindfulness and breath work and opening up the heart, allowing joy and as you're breathing in that heart space, thinking of your loved one, of a beautiful memory and gratitude, we know that makes you feel better. There's research on it. That's what we need to start practicing and helping people to know that maybe just 2 minutes of that, of a memory, of love, of that loved one, of their smile, how that will make them feel when they start to do that. That's such a powerful
yes. and
thing.
And also we don't have to use the actual person, right?
No.
To be, like you said, you can go to the flower or the really
it can be the flower,
thing.
It can be a pet, it can be a smile, yeah. it can be anything
yeah.
to just get that heart coherence. And it's such a beautiful exercise. But if you don't know it, then you don't know it. And I think the trouble is that I think the thing I would say for people in grief, if you're listening, please get support and help, because people can give you these tools and tricks and things to help support you through the journey so that it goes a little easier. It's not an easy journey, but if you have a little bit of support, it does make a big difference.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, Carol. It has been really a treat for me to get to talk to you and with these unexpected connections that we have.
Yes, and been nice,
And I would love to just let people know how they can get in touch with you and anything you've got going on you'd like to tell them about.
Okay, yes, you can get in touch with me through my website, which is www.carolbannons.com. There's a contact me form. Everything's there. There are a few of the podcasts I've done, but just email me from there and we can chat. And I'm doing grief to gratitude coaching. So if you are struggling, and you know, can I just say coaching is different to counseling? Counseling in the initial stages when you're looking back and you're in that deep grief, that's very helpful. Coaching is more when you're ready to move forward. How are we going to move you forwards now? How are we going to get you back to life and to joy? That's where I'm at.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much. I will, of course, everything will be linked below
and
on the platform that you're listening. And of course, I want to remind everyone that if you go to donnalyn.blog, you will see that you can now access a joy quiz, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. It is about 2 minutes. It's 11 questions, multiple choice, all different pictures and stuff. It's kind of fun. And it really explores this, like, where are you on that roadmap to joy? So mm-hmm. you can figure out what city are you? And then, you know, what can we do from there? How do we get from wherever you are to where you want to go?
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Donnalyn.
Thank you very much.